Hi, and welcome to Terra Nullius Cyprus podcast. I'm Costa Constanti. I'm here in Bondi in Sydney, Australia, and I'm sitting here with Kay Bavlou. Kyriagoula is your Cypriot name, named after your grandma, I believe, yeah? I'm sitting here with Kay Bavlou, and Kay is somebody who I've met online not so long ago. And whilst here in Sydney, we were chatting about potentially doing a podcast together. And I was running out of time, and I just happened to ask, where are you staying? Turns out she's staying literally two streets away from where I'm staying in Bondi, which is something that only happens in Cyprus. So as they say, you can take the Cypriot out of Cyprus, but you can't take the Cyprus out of the Cypriot. So here I am, meters away from where I'm staying, and I'm sitting with you, Kay. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Welcome to the village of Bondi.
It's a beautiful village. We're sitting here, for those that obviously can't see us, we're looking out the window. There is greenery. There's eucalyptus trees. There's native wild flora everywhere. It's absolutely gorgeous. It is a rare cloudy day for Sydney. It doesn't happen often. But it is a beautiful neighborhood. Bondi is basically... to give the Cypriots an idea what Bondi is, it's the Finigoudes or the Molos or the Brodaras of Australia, not just
Ayanapa.
Sydney. Ayanapa. Well, no, Ayanapa is not exactly a positive thing. No, but Bondi is the place to visit when you come to Australia. And I'm very lucky to be staying in Bondi and now visiting you as I'm a neighbour here in Bondi. But Kay, let's before we get into what you do and why I'm interested in you, having just now met you for the first time, I'm very excited because I've had a little quick walk through your house and I've seen some of your amazing artwork and photographs, and we've had a couple quick discussions about who you are and whatnot. But let's go back in time. I want to know, who are your parents? Because that's such a simple question to ask. You know, who are your parents? Where are they from? What's their story?
Exactly. That's the first question. It's great. Now, well, we're generations of family on both sides, maternal and paternal, from Rizogarpaso, which everyone knows is the northernmost village, and I say the most occupied village. My father came to Australia the very end of 1949, so 1950. He worked here for 10 years and then he went back to Cyprus to a Banayiri at Apostolos Andreas, and that's where he met my mother.
Wow.
That's a nice little...
So 1959. Gee,
yeah.
You know, that not many people came all the way from Cyprus in the 40s and went back in the 50s. Was it a one-way trip back or was it a visit?
No, he went back with a friend of his. They both migrated in on the same journey, and then they said, it's been 10 years, let's go back to Cyprus.
Amazing.
And there was possibility they'd find love, but they weren't sure.
I'm sure they knew what they were doing.
Dad found my mother at the Banayiri. So
the Banayiri of Apostolo Andrea. Now, that was meant to be one of the biggest, most special Banayiri carnivals, festivals of the island. Just a little story I'll tell you about the Banayiri of Apostolos Andreas. My maternal grandfather was a fireman. And he had access to fire trucks. And during the Apostolo Andrea Banayiri, probably in the late 60s, the queues of cars coming from all over the island, going up the Gatpasia Peninsula, you can imagine traffic jams. Cypriot traffic at the best of times is terrible. You can imagine when there's a Banayiri, the whole island's heading there. But my grandfather had the fire truck, so he put the whole family in the fire truck, put the sirens on, and in the opposite lane, gunned right down the peninsula to Apostolos Andrea. And it's one of my mum's favourite stories to tell about this privilege that they had. You know, try doing that now, you'd lose your job, you know.
You'd end up in Turkey probably.
Yeah. But okay, so he goes to the Banayiri and he meets your mum.
Yes.
Love at first sight?
Well, yes. But my auntie was the matchmaker, so she sort of speeded things up.
Is her name Talu by any chance?
No.
It's such a common name for a matchmaker, you know.
Talu, no. It was Andrulla. So my parents got married fairly soon after that because Dad had a return ticket to Australia.
Did he have citizenship by that stage already?
Yeah.
He must have been 10 years young,
Yeah. See, it's really interesting, that question, because they were both British subjects.
Actually, yeah, 1959, Cyprus is still a UK dominion, British dominion. Yeah, so, okay, no, that may not have mattered then.
Yeah. I'm not really sure.
There's the turning point, 1960s, the independence, so that's a good question.
Okay. It is. I'll ask Dad next time, because he, Gomazi or Baba.
He's 97.
Yeah. So, my father, Panayotis Pavlou, my mum, Andriana Paoros. Mm. We've got relatives now in the UK, mm-hmm. here, and America, mm-hmm. And a few more distant in South Africa, as, you know, the Cypriots like to spread around.
For such a small island, we are everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, they pop up. Yeah. So, yeah, that's how they got here. And then I was born in Adelaide. My sister and I were born in Adelaide. They mm-hmm. settled in Adelaide.
So your dad had come to Adelaide first, not Sydney, right?
He went to Adelaide first. He spent 3 years in Sydney mm-hmm. Before he got married.
Right.
And then they settled back in Adelaide. It was an easier place to settle and bring up a family. And Dad had a brother in Adelaide. So, okay. So there was some family there. But that's all. Most of the family didn't come here. Most of the family, unlike yours, stayed in Europe or mm-hmm. somewhere else. But, yeah, so we were both born in Adelaide. And then I went to university in Adelaide and I thought, oh, what am I doing? What am I doing? Started a psychology degree. I mm-hmm. thought, psychology, yeah. I didn't like the course. It was a really boring course. And
I did the same thing.
Did you?
Yeah, my bachelor was psychology, behavioural sciences at La Trobe, and I found it very boring.
It's rats and stats.
Yeah, it's exactly. Okay, you understand. I understand you. You understand me. Okay.
It wasn't a...
Rats and stats. I love it. It's 100%.
It wasn't a lot about human beings, and I started... think there was a great cinema studies course mm-hmm. and so I switched to cinema studies and then I applied for the film school in Sydney mm-hmm. and that's how I came here.
What year was that when you got to Sydney?
Oh, in the, it shows you how old I am. Late 80s.
Late 80s, okay. Yeah. So Sydney had been discovered by this stage by European settlement.
That's
I'm just
right.
kidding, I'm joking.
That's right.
I every time I visit Australia, I just realise how new it is in the sense of European settlement. We know that Indigenous culture has been here for a minimum of 60,000 years, and a lot of people don't understand that. But the world that we know in Australia has only really been around since World War. So, yeah, I mean, the 80s was still pretty new.
Sydney was a lot smaller then. You know, all of Australia was a lot. You know, we've got such a small population for a country that's almost the size of Europe.
Well, it's actually bigger than Europe. If you remove the waters of Europe, so the Mediterranean and the Baltic Sea, it actually, you can fit the whole of the European continent in Australia.
Wow.
I mean, you can fit 8 Cypresses in Tasmania.
Yeah.
So it gives you an idea how big this country is and how empty it is. So I was just mentioning to you before, I drove from Melbourne to Adelaide, Adelaide back to Melbourne. I've driven from Melbourne to Sydney. Tomorrow I'm driving to Brisbane. These are 10-hour minimum drives, you know, and there is nothing in between except... Yeah. When we say villages, we mean villages, you know.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Adelaide itself is not the greatest city in size. I mean, it's a beautiful place, but it's a small city. It's about 1 million people.
Yeah.
You know, which in the scheme of things is not big, you know. So okay, so you come to Sydney with I'm digressing, that's what I do. So you come to Sydney in the 80s.
Yeah. And I it doesn't sound that long ago, or maybe it does sound long ago, but in those days... women in the Greek Cypriot community didn't do that sort of thing.
Yeah.
We were expected to get a good job. I was encouraged to study. There was no problem there. My parents supported. My father had graduated in Cyprus before he came here. Mm-hmm. He finished high school and he did tertiary studies here. So, and my mother did night school, but...
Your mother did night school. Sorry, I want to jump in there. What did she do?
I know. She did. She became an interpreter translator.
Brilliant. It's a good honour. Good honour.
So, I know.
I mean, wow, coming from Elizabethbus, one of the most remote village of the island, to actually then be studying as a woman, that's impressive.
I know, because she got shy about her English, but eventually she jumped in. And, my dad was an international salesman for a Greek company mm-hmm. out of Adelaide. Mm-hmm. And he used to go and sell prawns to the Japanese.
Yeah. Entrepreneur, Cypriot DNA there.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Well, the oyster. So so I had strong parents who mm-hmm. supported getting an education, but mm-hmm. filmmaking, they thought I was crazy.
Yeah.
So I came here and started my life here, and I was very much identified more as Australian mm-hmm. with Greek background, mm-hmm. but... to get away from the Greek community, I really didn't I didn't know who I was. I was still working it out. So when I got here, I changed my name to Pavlou because Dad had anglicised it to K. Paul, Mary Paul, Peter Paul, Andrea Paul. in those days, because there was a lot of racism. And I gradually found my Cypriotness. And after I finished studying, I made a documentary in Cyprus in 1990.
So, no, that was the first time I visited Cyprus, 1990. It was a 10-year-old with my mother at the time.
But there's a bit age difference between us. That's all right.
Well, you're 3 years older, and it's
yeah, exactly.
But okay, so you made in 1990. You made your first film or documentary.
It was a two-part documentary for SBS Television. Made some good connections there already through a few wild moves with, you know, I took on the police. My film school film was about a police shooting. And so because I did that, I sort of made some good connections with people who thought, okay, she takes risks, let's send her to Cyprus.
And that was probably around the time when Australia was starting to iron out the kinks in the police force. Yeah. Because before that, there were a lot of issues, a lot of police brutality.
Yeah.
I mean, basically where the Americans are today. You know, so...
Yeah.
Oh, very interesting. Yeah, you would have made a name for yourself. You would have made some enemies in the process at the time.
I did.
Yeah.
I was happy to do that, though. Well, actually, I was naive. I didn't even know how much trouble I'd get into because the police came after me. But he shot a Greek kid in the western suburbs in Sydney.
Wow.
Point blank. Okay. So that's when I started to reconnect with the Greek community and tell their stories. Mm. And then when I went to Cyprus, it was an amazing experience.
Was that your first time going to Cyprus?
It was the first time as an adult. My mother had died young.
Okay.
My mother had died very young, and we'd gone to visit the family just after she died. So that was sort of my second trip as an adult. Mm-hmm. We were lucky to be taken as kids to see the village before the invasion. So I've had a couple of trips, but anyway, so I worked through different connections, and I actually filmed Alexandra Alexandridis, her name was then. She led the women walk home. She became a PM, that Green Party.
Yeah.
I know she's just left Parliament. She resigned from the party.
Alexandra Atalidis.
Atalidis, now. Amazing
she,
woman.
Yeah, she was with the Greens, and now she's with Volt.
Okay.
It's a new party,
Okay.
Obviously, because you've moved after being elected, technically Volt's not in the parliament, but they're running in the European elections in June, so we wish them the best of luck. They're very good candidates. They've got both Greek and Turkish Cypriot candidates, pro-Cyprus, which is really lovely, and actually... One of the candidates, Hulusi Kilim, was actually one of my podcast guests. So a little shout out to him. That hasn't been released yet, so you hear that soon.
Definitely.
But the women walk home. What an amazing moment in not just Cypriot history, but in women's history globally.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people, even in Cyprus, aren't aware of what that is. Now, I'm just going to take over for a second here. I might. Yeah. Basically, you had women from across the divide, but primarily Greek Cypriot women, and a lot of internationals came into Cyprus and coordinated this protest, non-violent but aggressive, if we want to use the word, movement where they took on the Green Line and pushed into the buffer zone. It was a long-planned, coordinated moment where... Even the guests weren't sure, sorry, the participants weren't sure where the event would happen. And they successfully drew international attention to the plight of Cyprus, promoting reunification and freedom of the island, women's rights. I mean, some women were arrested by Turkish soldiers. The UN tried to mediate. It was something phenomenal. Now... a friend of mine, Neddy, who put together a stage production of Women Walk Home, has presented it in Cyprus a few times. We're trying to actually get it to Australia and the rest of the world. It can be done in Greek or English. And it is just this most amazing stage performance that tells the story of the Women Walk Home.
Amazing.
And I would love for you to see that, whether you see it in Cyprus or whether we manage to get it to Australia as planned. But it really is a pinnacle moment in Cypriot and global women's history in anti-violence, anti-conflict, anti-war, anti-occupations. it's something that the world really needs to know about. That's why I'm really harping on about this. So totally. Thank you for going there.
Yeah, well, I'd missed it. It had happened before I got there, but I was able to get some archive footage and an incredible interview with Alexandra. Mm-hmm. So they were the sorts of people that I met when I was there, and I've still got connections with some of the people from 1990. Mm-hmm. And then again, I got in trouble when I got back, when it went to air here. There's a very right-wing part of the Turkish Cypriot community here, mm-hmm. like there is in every community, there's sure. right wing.
Yeah.
So they objected. I did include a Turkish Cypriot person in Cyprus as well.
Mm-hmm.
He was working with a Greek government. He was a senior public servant.
Mm-hmm.
Name escapes me now. It was 1990. Anyway, mm-hmm. so I tried to. That was my first personal documentary and my beginning of rediscovering
Cyprus.
My Cyprus and my connection to it. But I have this obsession,
mm-hmm.
and the biggest obsession really comes from the fact that when in 1974, when everybody left or was pushed out of the north, mm-hmm. and I know you've got some experience with yeah. Enclave and Glovis Meni,
yeah.
we had a lot of our family remained in Glovis Meni mm-hmm. in Rizogarpasol. Mm-hmm. So my grandparents stayed.
Oh, right.
And my Theo, my dad's right. brother, Luca. And they stayed in Rizogarpasol until they died.
Wow.
Some of them for 40 years.
Yeah.
And Uncle Luca was a classic character. He used to drive the Red Cross bus to the Lidra Palace. And when my mother died in the 80s, we went to visit the family in Cyprus. And
did you manage to go to the Rizogarpasol?
We couldn't go to Rizogarpasol. We met them at the Green Line in Lidra Palace. Yeah. And my Theo drove the bus and my papu came, and it broke his heart that his daughter came here for a better life. She died of cancer and he's still in the village holding on, living under occupation. And that was, you know, they took all their land. You know what happened.
Yeah,
they took all their land. They basically lived in the house with their animals.
Mm.
They lived with the chickens and the...
No, they certainly did not have an easy life.
No.
I mean, it wasn't an easy life living in a rural village at the tip of the island to begin with, let alone being disconnected from your community.
Yeah.
Like whether you're bicommunal and have Turkish Cypriot friends or not, that's one story. But to be, you know, your Greek speaking neighbors, your priest, your psychologist, your doctor, whatever, to be all of that to just shatter.
And all the schools too, because one of my theas, she was young, she mm-hmm. had to go to school and the school's closed. So she went to school out of a refugee camp in Limassol.
Mm-hmm.
But her parents stayed in Clovis Meni, my grandparents. So,
can you imagine the heartbreak of sending your kids to the other side of the island? And we're talking the 70s where you didn't have fast cars and great highways. So that was like sending them to the other side of the planet.
Yeah. And no one knew the future. You know, we'd visit my Theo Christoula in the refugee camp without proper, you know, it was basic. Mm-hmm. So when I saw them the way they were, That's what made me feel like I had to do the doco. So mm-hmm. I went back in 1990 and mm-hmm. made that documentary. And then I thought, one day I'd like to make a feature, because I direct drama as well as documentary. So I've carried on and had all sorts of – directed shows like McLeod's Daughters, which people might know.
Wow, I know that one. I think any Australian Cypriot listening knows that one.
It's a classic. So I directed some of that, and – I've also directed episodes of Who Do You Think You Are?
Oh.
So investigating celebrities' ancestry. So
I've
been all around the world, going into Poland for Magda mm-hmm. Szubanski. Mm-hmm. And
I'm looking over your shoulder and I see her book on your shelf there.
Yeah.
The red book on the right. Yeah. Magda Szubanski, Reckoning.
That's it, Magda's biography, autobiography, inspired to some degree by her experiences. So I've helped other people find their families and their ancestry.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's been a great privilege to do that.
You know, let me just segue into another topic for a second. And I brought this up in a couple other podcasts. We talk about our ancestry. Now, one thing that has frustrated me for years, and it's frustrating me now, is how some people say, I'm a Greek Australian, I'm an Italian Australian, I'm a German Australian. And then some people, like, usually British heritage, Germanic heritage, Scandinavian heritage, or Irish heritage, is I'm Australian. And it's like, hang on, I'm putting the denominator at the front, Cypriot Australian. Why are you saying just Australian? Why? What makes you more or less Australian than me? Because the only Australians really are your Indigenous community that have been here for 60,000 years. You know, so how are you Australian? And so I've had a few run-ins with friends where they're like, they may be Italian Australian. They're like, oh, yeah, they got married to an Australian. And I quite sarcastically say, oh, they got married to an Indigenous group. Which clan? And they're like, no, 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 Australian, Australian. I'm like, define. And you get the description. I'm like, oh, you mean British Australian? Because I feel almost sorry for a lot of people that don't know their British heritage or their Irish heritage. And I know that newer Australians are quite aware of their heritage, maybe because they're fresher. It's more, you can still talk to parents or grandparents that are from the old land.
Yeah.
A lot of white Anglo-Saxon Australian doesn't know exactly where they're from because they've been here for a few more generations. And I think it really is important that some of them rediscover their roots, because without your roots, what are you?
It's fascinating. You just, you know, and of course the obsession now with doing your DNA testing and, you know, and that gives you something.
Yeah.
You don't get the stories. That's the thing.
No, that's right. It's the science, not the psychology behind it.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I agree with you totally.
Mm.
Of course, it's insane that everyone thinks, oh, I'm Australian. In fact, our origin story is completely incorrect because we are all migrants.
Yeah, 100%.
Can we just reset that, please? We are all migrants.
Exactly.
The longest standing Australian is only 200 years,
That's literally last week in European
just
history.
Just over 200 years, that's it.
Yeah.
So
I mean, we are living in homes in Cyprus that are over 250 years old, and we know who they belong to and who built them. So, you know, the European-styled Australian, I use the word reluctantly European because we now know that Australia is European, Asian, African, Middle Eastern, you know. What we see in today's Australia is only 200-something. And really, it's only after World War when the doors opened to migration because they desperately wanted to populate the place. Yeah. I mean, and it's only been the last couple of decades that we've been discussing the Indigenous history of the island. I mean, we're very late to that party.
So rude. Very rude of us.
Exactly.
Extremely rude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, 100%.
So that's the other thing I did. I worked with some Indigenous people and helped them find their ancestry because, of course, the way that the families were broken up with colonisation and people taking off their land, did some incredible journeys with people like Adam Goods.
Oh, wow.
Who was, you know, a giant, is a giant of a man. So anyway, so I did all of that, and then there's still this burning, there's this sort of niggling feeling, I've got to do something more about Cyprus, what am I going to do? 2022, I made a short film, 7 minutes, because we went over to Dvarossi, to Famagusta with my cousin. Sorry?
What year was this?
22.
20, okay, so once they'd opened up.
Just opened. Yeah, that stupid road.
Yeah, the dark tourism road, yeah.
Exactly. Mm. That dark tourism road goes past my auntie's hotel.
Which one?
The Hesperia.
Oh, that's your auntie. I know that building very well. Yeah,
The Hesperia. And my cousin left when she was taken. She was six when the invasion happened. So she remembers it. We went down there and I just impulsively filmed it to show family. And then I just turned it into a short film just to get started again. It's only a short film, but then that got me going. So now I've got two films, and one I'm almost finished and one I'm planning to do later in the year, fingers crossed. So the one I'm doing now is the 50th Black Anniversary, as every Cypriot knows, this July of the Turkish invasion. So I thought last year, I thought, what can I do that's positive? So I've chosen six elderly Greek Cypriots here, five from Sydney and one from Adelaide. That would be my dad.
Mm-hmm.
So
he lives in Adelaide.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, we grew up in Adelaide. Yeah, he's still there.
I thought maybe he might have followed you.
This town's too big for him. Yeah. So I thought, okay, the elders, let's look at their stories because they are getting, well, yeah. It goes from 70 to 102 years old, mm-hmm. my people, and they've got extraordinary stories. So it's through personal accounts, mm-hmm. we learn about the history of Cyprus, mm-hmm. and we feel their longing and their feeling, their love for Cyprus, their love for Australia.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I've called it Two Homelands.
Yes.
Because that's the story of every migrant. And that's the it's sort of a mixed blessing to have two homelands.
You use the words mixed blessing. I earlier, when we were chatting before the recording, I said it's also a mixed curse having two homelands, not knowing which one is the primary base, which one you love more.
Yeah.
And many people say, well, it's 50-50. On the other hand, it's 100-100. Like, I can feel 100% Australian, I can feel 100% Cypriot, and I tend to feel the opposite of where I am. But it must be such a fascinating journey for these older generation who were not in touch with their homeland, let's say, like we can be, because we have Facebook, we have the internet, we have TV, we have affordable and prompt travel. Mm. It's a day to get to Cyprus versus 3 months around Africa on a ship, you know. So a lot of these older generations left Cyprus literally one way. I know many that have never returned. And they left with a memory which may not even be correct.
Yeah.
And certainly Cyprus has changed in the last decades. Unrecognizably. I mean, it's changed in the 18 years I've been there. So this yearning and this love for the homeland can often be disappointing for them as well, especially when they visit. And especially if they're visiting, for example, if they're from the north, if they're a Greek Cypriot from the north or a Turkish Cypriot from the south, you know, they don't come home.
It's heartbreaking because I've got a couple of Turkish Cypriot friends here. Mm. I've got a lovely Turkish Cypriot friend in Cyprus too, Neshe Yashim, who's extraordinary.
The wonderful poet.
Oh, wonderful poet and just so committed to bicommunal conversation. And But I digress because with my film, I wanted to make a film with Neshe, but so hard to get funding. So in the end, I've self-funded this. Which is crazy because I'm a very good producer, director, writer, but I'm not a great camera person or sound person. So technically it's been challenging, but I needed to do it. It's all in Greek.
Mm-hmm.
We'll probably get it on SBS. We're hoping. But, you know, I'm touring it. I'm showing it at the clubs, the Cyprus clubs in July here.
Yep.
And
when you say here, just Sydney?
Sydney and Adelaide and hopefully Melbourne later too.
You must take it to Melbourne, yeah.
Yeah, because so many people there want to see it. And so the six are three who came after the mass migration after World War II.
Mm-hmm.
They turned up the suitcase, lived their lives here, most of their lives here, and three of them are Prosfiers.
Mm-hmm. Refugees.
Refugees from 1974, yeah.
Wow.
Who also came with a suitcase, but they came with a lot more grief.
Yes, I was going to say there's a difference in a voluntary migrant and a reluctant migrant.
Yeah.
One's roots are torn out of the ground and one's roots are cultivated out of the ground. And it does make a difference. Apologies for the analogy now, but it's like when you have a bar of chocolate and you're eating away and you've come down to the last cube and you're about to savor that last cube and someone else has it. You know that taste that's left in your mouth that you're not done? And I think that's what happens when you're forcefully moved from your home. You just haven't had the closure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the stories are found and there are multiple stories and people come up to me and they say, you got to tell my story. I said, I can't tell everyone's story. But so for instance, one woman, Stella, was pregnant during the invasion and her fiance, she was 1 week from getting married, he got killed.
No.
So she's a single woman with pregnant, trying to give birth on the Turkish side, now Turkish illegitimate government that it is. And she ended up in a hospital and they told her, you have to get out of here because it was Turkish run, because if it's a boy, they'll keep him for the army. So this is the things that people have been through. And so these stories have to be told.
Yeah.
And then I bought a bunch of archive because it's amazing when you look at the archive from 1970s the sort of naivety and simplicity, really, when you see the way war was carried out in 74. Yeah. And the thing about Cyprus is, yeah, we are neighbours with much more complicated conflict.
Mm.
And, you know, we... So, and there's lots of people on our island, on Cyprus. I call it our island. Mm. I was born here, but anyway. on Cyprus, who are trying to find bicommunal solutions. And, you know, in my film, I mainly focus on the Greek community because that's how I started the story. Mm. But I have included stories about Turkish Cypriots as well. And one day, if it was a longer film, I would do the Turkish point of view too, but it's so different, so complex to try weave it all in.
You only have, I mean, if you're going to make a much longer documentary of different versions of it, then sure, and it would be great to do that.
Yeah.
But also, I'm guessing the Turkish Cypriot story is not one for you as a Greek Cypriot to tell sometimes, unless you do get engaged and they're willing.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, I know some great Turkish Cypriot people who would have been great interviewees.
Yeah.
But I don't know much of the older people. And I wanted to, one of the other things was I wanted to, you know, that's the thing, like Aboriginal people talk about the older people as elders.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And they have great status.
Yes.
And we've lost that status for the older generation. So I wanted to give them that. And I'm not calling them seniors, I'm calling them elders to give them that. And so that was important for me.
It's an earned status.
Totally.
Absolutely aren't. I mean, yeah, sorry.
And their stories. Yeah. I mean, people stop listening to them, but the story, all of them have got extraordinary stories. Yeah. You know, one of the 102-year-old, he fought in World War II. Mm. And he, one of those few veterans. And he remembers saying, right, 1943, time to fight the fascists. You know, clear as a bell. So anyway, that's Two Homelands. Yeah. Nearly finished that. Then I thought, I've got to tell a story about the Inglovis meaning. How am I going to do that? I kept writing different drafts, different ideas. I did it about my mom, that she was dying and her last wish was to go to the Inglovis mental village. And then I did a few drafts of that and it broke my heart, so I just put it aside and just said, sorry, mum, I'll just let you rest in peace. And then I thought, I went back in 2003. As soon as the border opened, I went back a few months later and I went with my aunties. And then I had the two sides of the family, dad, mother and father. I went to my mum's family first because we'd lost her. And they got kidnapped by my uncle Luga. They threw me in the car.
I heard kidnapped. Like, hang on.
Turkish jail. No, I got kidnapped by my uncle Luga. They threw me in the car and then, you know. And then
now Uncle Luga is the one that used to drive the buses.
The bus. Okay, his car broke down, of course. Yep. So we had to push it up a hill. You know, see, you're laughing.
I should have laughed.
No, it's true. This was a day where I laughed and cried all day.
Yeah.
I was between tears and absolute laughter.
Yeah.
You know, we had to push this car up the hill with all the Turkish Cypriot settlers watching us. You know, the situation is crazy.
It's surreal. It is such a surreal country, such a surreal island. Yeah.
So mad. Yeah. So I came home and I told my producer friend, who's one of my best buddies, Rosemary, and she said, there's your film.
Mm-hmm.
Just make it a comedy. A tragic comedy. And so that's what I've got. I've got a dysfunctional family comedy set in an occupied village.
I love it.
That's my pitch.
I love it.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it. And you know what? I recently, during the Melbourne Comedy Festival, I went and saw Nazim Hussein.
Yeah.
And I was fascinated with the concept of using comedy to deliver political messages, using comedy to tell a story, using, you know, I think that's brilliant because I don't think comedy's been used in Cyprus to deliver the story of the Cypriots.
Well, no. I think there've been a couple of. I've seen quite a few Cypriot films, but certainly not a comedy about the single of his men.
No, that's what I mean. Like, there's comedies in general. Yeah, that are just comedies about comedy, but a comedy that's telling this dark story. To be honest with you.
You know?
But sometimes you need that. I mean, history is full of serious stories told in a comic way.
Yeah.
I mean, even Shakespeare has a lot of comedy in his serious stories. I mean, they're not history stories, but, you know, like...
Yeah.
So, no, I think that's a really good... Yeah, thank you. That's a very good angle, and I like that.
Thank you so much. It's called My Land, or Dohorafimu, and I'm working with a great bunch of people here in Australia, producers, and I've got a Greek Cypriot fellow, Andreas Christopher, who's trying to help me raise money here, and I've cast it. It's Tris Yenyes, Three Generations of Women is the story.
Wow.
A young woman who grows up in Australia, a bit like us, no connection to her background.
Yeah.
And then her mother dies and she she inherits a plot of land, and she goes to the Horior, the enclosement or the enclaved village, and she meets her grandmother for the first time, which of course she's named after. And then the madness begins. Yeah.
That's just amazing.
And it's based on my family, a lot of it. A lot of it's true stories. For instance, my grandma punched a Turkish police in the face and put him in hospital.
Do we have the same grandmother? If I had anyone from the Constanti side of the family listening, we may have just discovered we're related. Because I think I have a similar story with my grandmother.
Amazing.
Oh, oh, that's wow. I'll tell you what, don't mess with the Karpashotes, you know.
Oh, no, those little old women with the black, they're being misrepresented.
No, don't have they ever. they're...
Yeah, totally.
Oh, no. Okay, that's isn't it amazing how we can have so many stories that overlap and are similar? I mean, the humanity is so... bleeds into each other, doesn't it?
I'm fascinated by national character.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot that unites us, you know. Yeah. I see myself, you know, I'm Greek, Australian, Cypriot. I'm also, I feel like a citizen of the world.
Yes.
Especially because I've travelled and seen, like, we did a Jewish story in Moscow with beautiful actress here, Justine Clark, who grew up connected to Irish background. And then we investigated her Jewish and we went to Moscow.
Wow.
Yeah. Found her living great aunt. But just those connections, it's like the Jewish, the Greek, the Italian, the... I mean, even I went to Japan recently. The culture there is so rich and so different but so connected. And yet each country has a bit of a national identity, a national character. Yep. So the fact that we've both got grandmothers who've punched Turkish authorities, you know, that... It doesn't. It surprises me, but it doesn't as well.
And the thing is that, let's be frank, in a very patriarchal society that Cyprus is, it's not like the men will be sitting in the cafe neons bragging about their missuses punching Turkish authorities, because it would only make them look weak.
Yes.
So it's up to us really to continue
the
those stories.
Get forgotten. Yeah.
Oh, that is amazing. Look, I mean, look, I hope anyone listening maybe has an idea for funding or maybe willing to throw some money at this, because this is the kind of thing that, in my view, not just the Australian multicultural and film Australia and whatnot should support, because at the end of the day, as we said before, Australia being made up of migrants, it's up to Australia also to promote the migrant stories. But I think Cyprus as a country, and both the Greek and Turkish Cypriot communities, should be finding ways to support these kind of films. Because, first of all, I've always said one of Cyprus's greatest assets is its diaspora. But its diaspora came from somewhere. It came from Cyprus. So I think if they really want to tap into that asset, if they really want to grow the network of Cypriots around the world, they need to take Cypriots around the world serious and actually help fund them, make stories like this, put it together. Because at the end of the day, it's only embedding the history, the value, the culture of the island onto the global stage. Yeah.
And that's our job, especially this year, I find, because it's the anniversary. We've got a little bit of spotlight, tiny bit. I mean, really, I mean, you wouldn't wish it on anyone. No. But the troubles that are happening in the Middle East are much larger than ours.
Oh,
when we say, oh, it's 50th Black Anniversary, well, what's happening in Palestine now or even in the Ukraine? Yeah. It doesn't compare. And we're not trying to compare, but for me, the 50th year and still the so-called Republic, the Turkish Republic of Northern Cyprus, interesting name, Turkish Republic of Northern Cyprus, is still not recognised by anybody on the planet, except Turkey.
Let me jump in there. So we, as Greek Cypriots, we're pleased, may we say, that it's not recognised internationally. Yeah. Can you imagine being a Turkish Cypriot that's pro-reunification of the island, pro-Cyprus? You feel Cypriot. Now, it's fine to feel Turkish Cypriot. At the end of the day, that is your identity. You're a Turkish Cypriot. And you feel Cypriot. You want to reunite the island. Can you imagine living in a in an entity that's not recognised, doesn't have the international relations, is a pariah state, and living next door to a Greek Cypriot-run, legitimate, internationally recognised government that is relatively hostile to you, let's be honest. They'll call a horse a horse. And then over the waters, you know, 60 kilometres away, you have a country that's running the show for you that is, let's be blunt, hostile to you. I mean, this is literally the classic example of a rock and a hard place. You know, and I honestly believe that it's our job as Greek Cypriots to assist Turkish Cypriots have that voice,
yeah,
have the power to stand up. We've lost a few opportunities in the past.
Yeah.
We've lost, as Cyprus, we're famous for never missing an opportunity to miss an opportunity. You know, it should be the motto on our flag, you know. Find the Latin version of that, I'll put it on the flag, you know.
Yeah.
But it's interesting what you're saying, that, I mean, we have this common thread that unites us.
Mm.
And I do like to believe that the day will come when the island is reunited and we look at this as just a period.
Mm.
Like we look at the Venetian period, the British period, this can be like the divided period, you know?
Yeah.
Inshallah, as we say in Turkish, let's hope that that day does come. Mm. But in the meantime, can we jump back to Australia for a second? Mm. Now, I'm aware that the Turkish Cypriot community is stronger and bigger in Melbourne.
Mm.
I think it's a practically non-existent everywhere else. There's some community here in Sydney.
There is.
Is there much interrelation between the communities here in Australia?
I certainly am no expert, that's for sure. I know some really interesting, progressive Turkish Cypriot people here in Sydney, and I don't know them very well. I got a bit nervous when way back in 1990 when I put my film on SBS and the right wing came out and said and demonstrated actually against my film. So I got a bit nervous after that, and I did go to visit them. I went to there. They had a community hall at the time. I don't know if it's still around. I walked in. There was a portrait of Ralph Diktash, you know, the president of that time, and
which triggers you as you walk in, of course.
Sorry,
it would have triggered you.
Yeah. I had took a deep breath and walked in, but so I'm not in contact. But there's some really great people here who are reaching out to Cyprus from here and to the UK Turkish Cypriots from here as well. Yeah. You know, that sort of global identity. And talking about being Cypriots, you know, that we have an identity around a particular island, which, as we say, is 1/8 or 1/7 the side of Tasmania, and yet it's divided.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, so crazy what that means. And for the North, how hard that is. Economically, they've always suffered from the fact that they don't really have access to the world or Europe. You know, the EU and stuff, and, you know, they don't have a entry in Eurovision or...
Even Australia does.
You see? That's right. So, you know, it's hard for the North.
It is hard for the Turkish Cypriot community. Mm. And I do think that I think it's time we grew up as well and said, you know what, it's been 50 years. I do believe... I'm not sure what the generations are called now, because you have the millennials, the boomers, the Gen Z, whatever the latest generation is called. I think they're much more advanced where they think business rather than emotion. So they're like, okay, you know what? You may be my enemy. We may have bad blood between us, much like Germany and France and the UK, you know.
Mm.
But I think they've just come along and gone, you know, we've had enough of this. I may not like you.
Mm.
I may not be willing to marry you and have children with you or work with you. I may not be wanting to have to do anything with you. However, it's in mine and your interest to sort this out.
Yeah.
Move on with a compromise, of course. Nothing can happen without a compromise, because we're all going to benefit from this. You can sit on your side of the fence, I'll sit on my side of the fence, whatever, but we're going to move forward together prosperously, because there is no other way. Because if you stay dividing the region that we live in, with Syria erupting, Lebanon falling apart, Israel-Palestine conflict, I mean, Egypt is on the tinderbox, especially on the Sinai. Turkey, tinderbox. I mean, Cyprus is sitting in this insanely volatile region.
Yeah.
And it can go either way. But if we do join forces and tolerate each other, and I really reluctantly use the word tolerate because I don't like tolerance. I prefer acceptance and integration, but at a minimum, tolerate each other, that will strengthen the island, strengthen the future for our kids.
And, you know, I mean, when you look at Australia, we're a very multicultural country. That doesn't mean that there aren't ethnic conflicts here, but, you know, you could be Christian, you can be Muslim, you can be Buddhist, you can Hindu, you know, and live side by side and not...
live and let live.
Yeah, and I know that was the case in Cyprus, say, 100 years ago. There was the Muslim community and the Christian community, and... everybody coexisted. Can I blame the British for the troubles?
I don't think many people disagree with you. No, look, we tend to blame the British, but I often like to say, you know, it's like in basketball. Somebody may throw the ball up, but it's up to you to alley-oop it into the hoop, you know. And I think the Cypriots, the opportunity was unfortunately afforded to them, and they took advantage and contributed to the division of the island.
Oh, look, I'm not, you know, and I've got lots of family in Cyprus that say too we're part of the problem.
Yeah.
Not me, not you and me.
No, we're
Yeah, but no, it's complex, and you know, people talk about conflict resolution all the time, and it surely it can be easier. But then, you know, even in Australia. You know, we're sitting in Bondi. This is going to date this interview, but we've just had we've just had the worst incident last week.
Yeah. So for those that don't, I know that it made the news in Cyprus, but I don't know how you describe the guy, deranged lunatic, because I mentally
He was schizophrenic.
Which we won't go into the topic of mental health because that's another podcast, but he had stabbed and killed 6 people and sent 12 to hospital, including a 9-month-old who unfortunately lost their mother. And that happened a couple of days before I arrived in Sydney. And it was traumatic for the Australian community as a whole because it happened in a mall that everyone frequents. It happened during school holidays. There were family with kids. And within a day or two of that, there was a stabbing at a Syrian Orthodox church by a Muslim perpetrator. And that was listed as terrorism because he had a motive and it was anti-whatnot. And that all happened within 48 hours of each other, and it rocked Sydney. And then as part of the second stabbing, there were riots. By the Assyrian, if I'm not mistaken, now I stand to be corrected, but the Assyrian Orthodox community descended on the church whilst the perpetrator was being held inside by the police, whilst paramedics were working on the injured, and riots erupted outside where they were smashing up police cars and they were demanding blood from the. And I thought, I watched that and I thought, wow, here I am in Australia in 2024. And we have riots based on ethnic or religious ideology. And it rocked me to the core because the last time I can remember that happening, and this is where people are going to start blaming me and my evil eye, but the last time this happened, I was in Cronulla. I don't remember how many years ago it is now. It's over 20 years now. I was in Cronulla the day of those riots where white Anglo-Saxon Australians battled with Middle Eastern Australians, and it was actually, I think, if not the worst riots Australia ever saw.
Yeah, and look, I kind of digress, and this will date this interview too, because now, just so people know, we're in April 2024. I brought it up because just 2 incidents in the last week, and something else happened in Melbourne. That level of conflict, how much it's rocked, the community, how people are on edge. And how long it'll take to heal from that. Not just the people very sad who died and their families and those who are injured, but it's affected the whole community in Bondi, but in Australia as well. And that's our local shopping centre.
Yeah. And I'm aware that Bondi has a lot of population that is of Jewish extraction.
Yeah.
Who I understand that immediately thought it was an attack on them.
Yeah.
And you can imagine the fear that was going through them. But then obviously that triggers the Palestinian and the Muslim community to feel a bit defensive.
Yeah.
And look, and you've mentioned this too, by international standards, micro attacks, micro events, because it sounds horrible, but in America this happens on a daily basis.
It does.
I mean, I was doing the stats the other day. Nearly 40,000 people killed by guns annually in the US. 40,000. We had 6 deaths by knife.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if you had access to a gun like the Americans?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, sorry, I digress now. But
we have. We're close
But these 2 small events happen daily on a major scale in Syria, Palestine, you know, in the region that Cyprus is in. And Cyprus went through a major crisis, conflict in the 60s and 70s. I mean, and I must note, everyone, especially the Greek Cypriot community, talks about Cyprus conflict as an event in the middle of 1974. Most of us are aware that it started in the 60s, started actually even in the 50s. You really want to go back. Some can even go back as far as 1931 with the Oktoberiana, when the Greek Cypriots battled the governor and burnt down the governor's house, which is now the presidential palace. You know, so Cyprus has always been rocked by violence. Thankfully, we haven't seen hard violence. It's been more micro cases, but we have had intercommunal violence over the last 10, 20 years. As recently as a few months ago, where some Greek Cypriots attacked Turkish Cypriots on a mountain escape. Like, they were, some Turkish Cypriots were in the mountains having a nice day out, and some Greek Cypriot fascists attacked them. And I thought to myself, where are we at? This is 2024. Why are we still doing
this? You know, I just had this flash, Costa. It's like we've digressed to the talking, because we're talking about conflict. But, you know, it's like we're giving them too much space.
Yes.
You know, we have to in order to resolve it, but,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Humans, we're the best and we're the worst, you know.
I guess it's all part of the human experience, isn't it? Look, the worst events bring out the best in people, to be fair.
True.
I mean, I've seen some amazing people come out of Cyprus, and I've seen some amazing people come out of Syria that are now in Cyprus. And I won't go into them because, I mean, anyone who happens to listen to my other podcast would have heard many of my Syrian stories in Cyprus, and they are beautiful. But look, I know we're running out of time. I will ask a couple last questions. When do you envision being back on the island of Cyprus?
Well,
next.
I wanted to be there in September this year to be filming. It may or may not happen. Things will have to happen quickly to do that. If not this September, then it'll be next year. And I don't envisage summer because it's too hot to film.
But just too hot in general.
Yeah. You can't think. So hopefully either this
September,
which is your autumn, or next year in the Cyprus spring. Plus all my cousins and their kids are getting married. So I've been to 3 weddings in the last 2 years and there's more coming.
Cypriot weddings. I mean, I've been telling people these last couple of weeks about my wedding 10 years ago. We had 300 people and they're mortified at how big that is. I'm like, hang on. By Cypriot standards, 300 is a micro wedding. I mean, we're talking about 3,000 normally.
It's too crazy. It's too crazy.
But look, I do hope to see your film, the documentary, and I hope to see your other works come through sooner than later.
Yeah.
I think you're a wonderful storyteller, and I think you're going to do obviously I'll do a little bit of research before we meet, and I've seen wonderful things coming from you, and I'm really excited about what's next.
Great.
I do want Cyprus, this is why we're doing it, I want Cyprus to meet you, and I want you to meet more Cypriots, because Cyprus, as small as it is, there are so many layers to it, and it is insanely rich, and it's so valuable. It's priceless, and I really want not just Cypriot Australians, but Australians in general to meet Cyprus as well.
Yeah,
you know, and I think it's our job to bridge that.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. It's a little island with a lot of diaspora, as you're saying. There seems to be Cypriots under every rock,
and all different types of Cypriots.
Yeah,
they're not uniform.
Yeah.
I mean, the stereotypical Cypriot of, you know, a black-dressed old lady at church is not the mainstream. You know? And there is no mainstream. It's everything.
Yeah. And, it's exciting. We're in a great part of the world, which is also a difficult part of the world. Yeah. I love being in Cyprus. And whilst two homelands, my homeland is Australia, but I keep getting, like, my sister doesn't feel it. I get this.
Neither does my brother.
magnetism back. Yeah.
I think you either have it or you don't.
Yeah.
Oh, well, look, thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for allowing me to come into your home to record this together. Again, beautiful view outside. After this, I'm going to be taking the equipment back to where I'm staying. I'm going to go down to the Bondi Beach and just enjoy a little bit of me time before I go back to Cyprus, where I have 3 kids, as you know, and that's where you don't have time anymore. But look, thank you so much. I appreciate it. I look forward to seeing you in Cyprus sooner than later. Do let us know when you're coming. We can do another session then with an update.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Ευχαριστώ πάρα πολύ.
Εγώ ευχαριστώ.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus. Island Talks. Open, diverse, free.